The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, like every week, we're bringing you the information you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And just a couple of quick housekeeping things for those of you who, I don't know, do things other than listen to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Couple of events coming up. Tonight, in fact, is our monthly Summit Investors Help Night. This is a Zoom meeting open to everyone that is hosted by the National Real Estate Summit. It is free to attend, and each month we have a new topic. But we don't actually have like a presentation on these things. It's a help night. You come on and you ask your questions about the topic, and we just have people there who know how to answer them. Tonight's help night topic is help with deal finding. I know that's something a lot of you guys are struggling with right now. We'll have Kathy Kennebrook there, Tony Young's there, Damon Remy, Rebecca Cicada talking. They're not going to be talking about anything because they're waiting for your questions. If you have questions about door knocking, direct mail, AI, anything like that, they are very experienced people who will know how to help you. So how do you get your link to come to that Zoom meeting? Go to CincinnatiRIA.com, click on the calendar. You will see the, calendar event, and you can just sign up right there. Again, there is no cost to that. Also, this Saturday, John Heyer, who was here on the show, I don't know, a month ago or so, is doing an all-day workshop on, I'm sorry, it's a half-day workshop. It's 9 to 1. John was like, nobody wants to hear about asset protection all day. And from 9 to 1, I can tell them what they need, which is not a Wyoming corporation and a Nevada LLC and an offshore trust. It's like one simple thing. I can tell them how to manage it. I can tell them about multi-member LLCs. I can do everything I need to do from 9 to 1. So that's online as well. If you'd like to attend, go to CincinnatiRIA.com. There is a charge for that, but I can tell you that if you're a member of Cincinnati RIA, it'll be cheaper. So CincinnatiRIA.com for that as well. Now, today we are going to discuss, I think possibly for the first time, a topic that I think everybody kind of knows about, but a lot of people seem to be doing wrong, and that is door knocking. Driving for dollars. I just said door knocking with Pete Young. So we're talking about driving for dollars, which is everybody knows that's the best way to find off-market deals. Like if you want off-market deals that have limited competition, everybody knows that the answer to that is driving for dollars. But it's not just getting in your car and driving around, guys. There's more to it than that. So to help us discuss this, a very important topic, we've got Matt Camp, who is the Vice President of Partnerships for Deal Machine, which if you have not heard of that before, is a, it's an app that, supports driving for dollars amongst other things. But the important thing is that he has been watching, I don't know, hundreds, maybe thousands of Deal Machine users for many years and has like information on what actually works for people, not works for Vina, works for people. So he's joining us from his home in Indiana. Matt, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Yeah, hey, Vina, thanks for having me on, and I'm happy to talk door knocking, too, if ever needed, but I'm ready to go. Excited to be on.
I am excited to have you on, and I think the first thing we need to deal with here, because, you know, there are new people coming into real estate all the time. I mean, I said driving for dollars like everyone was going to know what that was.
Right.
Can you just, like, in 60 seconds explain what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're very right in terms of the quality of the list and why people do it. So we can dig into that stuff too. But just to kind of give you a quick little brief background, driving for dollars, the term meaning, hey, simply getting your car, whether it be physically or virtually, and, you know, driving around, looking for those fixer-upper properties that have signs of physical distress, that, hey, they're, for whatever reason, the owner just is not able to keep up with the appearance. They don't want to, you know, deal with this property anymore. There's a million reasons why it might be in that condition, but if you're able to put in the work, identify those houses that are in bad shape, you're identifying the best opportunities to market those hidden deals. So it's simply getting in your car and finding those houses and building a list of them.
Or if you're in a dense metropolitan area, or you just, you know, like to minimize your carbon footprint, you could get on your bike. You could get on your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. That bike for dollars, walk for dollars. We've seen it all.
The point is that it's a way of identifying properties with problems which is going to, once you've talked to the owner, you're going to find out the owner's got a problem too. But as opposed to the direction we usually go, which is let's find an owner with a problem and then see what the property is. So next question is, I think I mostly hear this discussed as a strategy for wholesalers, and heaven knows I can't even count the thousands of hours that I have spent driving for dollars looking for wholesale deals, but who else is it for? Like, is it only wholesalers who should be paying attention?
No, I mean, it is common for wholesalers just because the name of the game for wholesaling is identifying those opportunities, right, is finding that next deal. But really, anyone who's looking to buy right, you know, if it's somebody who, you know, whether you're wholesaling, yes, of course, or if you are fix and flipping, if you are buying, holding, burying, you know, if you're going to do a creative offer, a cash offer, regardless, even going retail, like the one common thing across the board is, hey, if you buy right, you can make your money when you buy, right? Mm-hmm. And the goal is, hey, if you come into that, regardless of your exit strategy, go identify these properties that, you know, are needing some fixing up, are in rough shape. That's the value add opportunity right there to go in, identify somebody who, like you mentioned, may have a problem you can solve, and then you can come in and help solve that problem, and in the process, buy right, buy it a good deal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Awesome. So we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the technical part that people don't seem to get. And when someone comes to me and they say, well, I went driving for dollars and I got 200 addresses and nobody called me, I start asking them a series of questions about, like, where, who, what, why, when, what was your follow-up? And we're just going to kind of go through that with everybody so that folks understand how to do this effectively. I also want to give listeners a chance to ask their own questions, which you can do by calling 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658, or you can do it by sending an email. That address is vinaradio@gmail.com, V like in Victor, E-N-A, radio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guest today, Matt Camp from Deal Machine. And we're talking about driving for dollars, like best practices for driving for dollars. Because those of us who've done it for years, we're like, I mean, duh, you do this and then this and then this and then this and this. But that's just not, like, I don't think I knew that when I when I started. I think somebody probably told me. So let's kind of just go through this. Matt, before we get into listener questions, which I just looked at my email and I've already got a bunch of them.
Great.
Why does driving for dollars work? Like what is special about driving for dollars versus anything else that you could be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a strategy. So in general, you know, when we're out there looking for off-market deals, when we're trying to identify those hidden opportunities in our market, our goal with that is to identify houses that are the most likely to sell and most likely to be owned by a motivated seller. And when you're looking at, you know, any kind of data points, really, you know, sit by on your computer, you can filter by data. There's a lot of ways to do this. When we look across the board, the least number of leads it takes to get to a deal, meaning the hottest leads, the highest quality leads in your market, are houses that are needing fixing up. They're the houses that you identify that are, you know, again, number one indicator of a motivated seller. It's the condition of the property. And in general, that's going to indicate that owner is dealing with something. They don't want to deal with this anymore. It's a great opportunity to come in and add value to that property. You know, that you can help them move quickly, conveniently as is. There's a lot of ways we can solve problems for them. But these leads, another really, really key piece of it is that they're not only an indicator that they're looking to sell, but they're also the least competitive leads in your market because they require work to go identify. They require you getting in your car and driving around or, you know, like you said, you know, running for dollars, biking for dollars, however you're doing it. You are putting in the work to go identify these houses yourself. So they're the number one indicator they're looking to sell. And on top of that, they're the least competitive leads because of that barrier of actually putting in the work to identify them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't buy a list that would be the equivalent of the list you need driving for dollars. Like, you know, I'm also a fan of buying lists and direct mail to those lists and whatnot. But the thing that I turn up a lot with driving for dollars are people who would not be on any list. For instance, I run across a lot of what I call unprobated estates. The owner has passed away. However, no one has opened probate. So there would not be, I mean, they wouldn't show up on an inherited list or a probate list. Eventually, they will probably show up on a tax delinquent list, but that could be 2-3 years up the road, right? And I'd rather get it now before it's been vacant for 2 or 3 years. Another one that I run across fairly frequently is people who are what I call frustrated landlords, and they're not behind on their mortgage, they're not behind on their taxes, they're not, you know, there's nothing that would identify them for one of these lists. But what happened is their last tenant moved out 6 months ago and they just can't take it anymore. And they're sitting there trying to figure out, like, do I go back in and fix it up again and rent it again, or do I sell it? Or, and they've just been dragging their feet because it's, you know, it's just such a huge problem. Another one is folks who, and oftentimes this also is rental property owners, are suffering from health problems. And they're the kind of person who always, like, they always did all their own work on the house. In fact, when I talk to them, they take pride in the fact that I used to go over there every weekend and trim the bushes and fix any problems, and now they literally cannot do it. And they're a little ashamed of the condition their property's gotten into, but they either financially or physically just can't do it anymore. So being able to offer them some sort of solution that works for them, you know, it's just these are largely non-list properties. Right, you're not. No one's going to find them any other way than driving for dollars.
Exactly.
So go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to mention a lot of those. Like you said, the common theme is they're a problem property, and you know they have those signs of, you know, having a tarp on the roof or gutters falling off, broken board up windows. You know, really obvious things like that. Sometimes they don't have to be that obvious. They can be things that are, you know, you can see that it's really outdated, or it's got, you know, that window AC unit. It's got, you know, those old school aluminum awnings. You can, the more you drive, the more you will be able to identify those properties that really stand out and say, hey, you know what, for whatever reason, the owner's just not able to keep up with this or don't want to keep up with this property anymore. You know, it can be those obvious things, or it can be, again, more subtle things that you pick up. But the more you get out there and do it, the better you get at identifying those kind of invisible deals.
But you are so right. It's, when you've done it enough, you get this sixth sense where you're like, mm-hmm. half a block up, there's an empty property. And you start,
yeah.
like, well, here in Ohio, it is pretty common for the code enforcement department to nail orders to somebody's door. Like they actually, mm-hmm. actually put a tack on the door with the orders on it. And anytime I see something hanging on the door, I'm like, oh, there's a problem here. That's either a water bill didn't get paid notice or it's just like you can start to feel, yeah, no, that one there, that's just an old, it's very well kept up. It's just kind of old fashioned, but that one over there, there's a problem. So
yeah, that's a great example. Yeah, those signs of vacancy, like the overgrown grass, the really overstuffed mailbox, things like that, you will pick up on. I use this example all the time, but one of our first hires, Josh out in Raleigh, he did his first deal. He actually was driving around a neighborhood, saw a house that had Halloween decorations up still, and it was like March. Just like, okay, you know what? they missed a few holidays here. Something's a little off. Like, let me just add this one, and ended up being a deal. So it's you pick up on it the more you do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The next question that I hear a lot, and I assume you're hearing the same questions, is about where. Like, so I'm gonna drive. I want to make the best use of my hour and a half on a Saturday morning, whatever the situation might be. It's a where question, because sometimes people call me and they'll say, I went driving for dollars for 2 hours over the weekend and I only saw two houses that I wrote down the addresses of. And I say, you were in the wrong neighborhood. So
yep.
Tell us what the right neighborhood is.
Yeah, if you go to the wrong area, I mean, if you, you know, don't put any prep into it or don't think about it from the right lens, then yeah, that can't happen where you're like, oh man, I should have picked a better spot.
This doesn't work. There's no such thing as an ugly house.
Yeah. But the good thing is though, you've got a lot of ways to be able to help you identify that ahead of time and help you just be smart about where you're spending your time. So, I would, you know, kind of backing up one step, I would probably, you know, really think about in terms of where to invest in general. There's kind of that A, B, C, D neighborhood levels that we try to explain to people, where the A neighborhoods are the properties that it's literally the nicest part of town, very tough to buy and have any kind of cash flow there, really tough to find properties you can add value to. We typically avoid that top end. And then the D neighborhood in general, avoid that as well, where especially you don't see activity and investment in the area. You're really looking for that kind of B and C, middle upper to, you know, which, you know, B would be the middle upper, walkable, great school, that type of area, to a C neighborhood, which also would be kind of an up and coming, you know, maybe a little more fringe neighborhood, but you start to see more investor activity and more, you know, new amenities coming to that market. And being able to come in and identify that B and C neighborhood to drive. And, you know, you can come in and actually look at data, you know, using a variety of tools there to be able to come in and figure out, hey, you know, where are the deals happening? Where are transactions happening? Can I look and see where there's a lot of transaction history and see where the investors are active? Because especially if we can identify that, where the transactions are happening, then, hey, we can go fish where the fish are at that point, right? Like, regardless if you're going to wholesale, then you're going to find a cash buyer much more easily in that way. If you're going to flip, you know, it's going to have much higher chances of appreciating, as well as for the buy and hold, you know, crew. So regardless of your exit strategy, I would always recommend kind of that, thinking about that B and C neighborhood, and especially looking at the data of, hey, where are transactions happening in my area?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's a, listeners, I really hope you caught that, because where you would love to be able to buy a cheap house is in the nicest neighborhood in your city. Where you're likely to buy a cheap house is someplace where people don't just have the money to write checks when their roof goes bad. Like the problem with A neighborhoods, it's not that there's no vacant houses there. I mean, people die in A neighborhoods too. It's that it's really hard to identify even those, because my experience is you're not going to see long grass because literally the neighbor will go mow the lawn so that their house doesn't look bad. So it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder to even tell what's vacant, and there's going to be very little ugly, and even the stuff that is vacant is going to be hard to identify. So Mike would like us to take a break. So before I ask the next question,
because
this is going to be a whole, like, how ugly is ugly kind of discussion. I want to again invite listeners, if you have questions, give us a call at 877-772-9658, or you can send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today to Matt Camp from Deal Machine. Deal Machine, by the way, is a sponsor of the 2024 National Real Estate Summit, and for those of you who are coming, look for the new agenda, because we are we're not holding it. Deal Machine is holding on the summit. At the summit, Deal Machine is going to be doing a challenge on Friday night, where people, everybody who attends, will actually get, I think, a free temporary subscription to Deal Machine for the purpose of actually kind of driving for dollars virtually during that session. And that you're going to be challenged to actually, you know, call some owners, get an appointment. And my understanding is that people who participate and get themselves an appointment are going to get a prize from Deal Machine. And also, it'll just get you over that whole, I don't know how to do this, I don't like calling strangers, because they're going to explain how all of that stuff works. So, like, we haven't done anything like this at the summit before, where we're like, no, we're not going to sit and lecture at you. You're going to come in here, you're going to do some stuff, and then maybe it's some stuff that you actually make money when you go home. So,
absolutely. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. That's going to be fun, just interactive, different session. Come into it with that mindset of leading with action. And, you know, it's going to be a fun night. So hope we can see you there.
I hope so, too, because I think some people are going to walk away with some good stuff that night. And also, by the way, for listeners who missed the chance to get discounted tickets during the fund drive, we are out of those special WMKB packages for discounted in-person tickets, because we're getting close to being out of in-person tickets. If you're still going, oh, I should really sign up for that, you need to go to oreaconvention.com to do that, oreiaconvention.com. But we have had a number of people call the station and inquire about virtual attendance, because that is also an option at the summit. And because that is a lot less expensive for OREA to fulfill than having you there drinking coffee and eating snacks and all that sort of stuff, OREA did donate a limited number of virtual tickets to the station, and they are also at a discounted price over what is on the website. So if you'd like to kind of attend by Zoom, all right, you're gonna get to see one session each hour, right? We can't have cameras set up and Zooms running in all three rooms, or we will blow up the internet. But you'll be able to see one session during each hour. You will be able to play from home on the Deal Machine session. You'll see the Pete Fortunato evening session. You'll get to watch the exchange meeting. It's, you know, if you can't physically be here in Cincinnati, it's the next best thing. So if you want to grab one of those virtual tickets at a discount and with a bonus course included, go to wmkvfm.org. Scroll down to the bottom of the page. You will see it now says virtual ticket, and your $297 will go to public radio at WMKV. So, Matt, you partly address this, but I think that sometimes the mistake that people make when they're driving for dollars is they grab the properties they would like to have instead of the properties that people probably want to sell. So,
right.
So yeah. whether you're doing it like the old school way of writing down the address on a piece of paper that you're going to lose, or whether you're using one of the apps to, you know, a lot of the apps, I know Deal Machine does this, will actually grab a picture of the property and like geolocate it. So you're no longer doing that thing where you're like, where's the address? This thing doesn't seem to have an address on it. Like the ugly houses, the address pieces have fallen off. What am I looking for? Like, how ugly is ugly?
Yeah, it's something. So, you know, as we mentioned, I mean, it's the number one indicator of a motivated seller is the condition of the property. And it doesn't have to be, you know, fallen over. It doesn't have to be a property that is very, very obvious that hey, this is a, you know, vacant house that no one's taken care of for years. You know, when we look at the data, it's, hey, you know, the houses that you're adding, if you can go out there, be consistent, you know, build a consistent list of leads, market to them consistently, which happy to touch on, you know, strategies to do that. But going out there and just being able to build this list of properties that, yes, the ones that are obvious with the, like I mentioned, the tarp on the roof, the gutters falling off, the broken board up windows, the, you know, really overgrown grass, really overstuffed mailboxes, things like that, that just are indicators that it's either vacant or a problem property. But also the less subtle things as well, just showing that it's, hey, it's you know, outdated, it needs some fixing up, it, you know, even the driveway is in bad shape, or the front yard or backyard is a little bit of a mess, or, you know, these little signs that you'll pick up on and it sticks out in your area. Again, as you put in the reps, as you train yourself on getting better and better at this, those will stand out to you, and don't be picky. Just add that lead, keep on moving. It's more about the consistency of building your list, and then the consistency of the thing that really matters, which is having conversations with sellers, right? And you know, reaching out to them to get to that point. That is the crucial piece. So it's whether it's you driving, whether you have, you know, a bird dog out there for you, whether you're doing it virtually. Like there's ways to do this that is not necessarily just you. But the key to the whole game is be consistent and don't get too picky with what a lead looks like.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to shift over to a question that I got from Jeff, who is in Tulsa, I believe, based on the name of his company. And he's tried this. He's tried driving for dollars, and in his words, he quote flopped. So he's got some questions about this. He says, is the best practice to find vacant homes so you're not just mailing to homeowners with deferred maintenance? His opinion is owner occupants would be a much lower response rate.
Yeah, I mean, vacant homes are great. I mean, I think that's the, you know, one of the top use cases across the board of where you're going to be able to identify these deals here. And when we look at the data, I mean, vacancy for sure is up there as a top factor, but it's absolutely not the only factor. I mean, in general, it's, hey, if it's a, you know, what we're looking for here, regardless, in general, whenever you're coming in and using data to help you identify how to go off market, how to go direct to seller, that data, our goal is to be able to help you guys go out there and say, yeah, use data to identify a list of properties that are likely to sell, right, that are likely owned by a motivated seller. And just across the board, the number one factor for that is the condition of the house, regardless of if it's vacant or not. Mm-hmm. So vacancy, absolutely, that's a you know, one thing that's going to be an indicator of that. But in general, you're looking for that fixer-upper, because it's a leading indicator. It's a deeper indicator that owner has a property that's a problem property. And hey, if you come in and, you know, are reaching out and top of mind at the right time, then you know, you can be the one to do that deal.
Well, and Jeff, also don't forget, if you're in a lower end B or a C area, you're looking at deferred maintenance, but you might not be looking at a homeowner. Yeah, somebody's living there, but in a B area, there's about a 50-50 chance, and in a C area, there's about a 70-30 chance that what you're looking at is a rental property that's owned by somebody who doesn't have the whatever, the wherewithal, the health, the whatever to maintain it. So
yes,
I think
our landlord.
Yeah, I think you've got a limiting thought here about, I'm going to write to some homeowner who's perfectly happy living in their deferred maintenance house, and so they're not going to respond. It's you know, half likely that you're not looking at an owner-occupied property at all. And I would need to, like, see what you mean by deferred maintenance, because would I write down a house that was just, you know, perfectly kept up but clearly hadn't been updated since 1970? Maybe not. Would I write to a house that the roof looked like it probably must be leaking? You know, those curled up shingles and stuff. Yes, I would absolutely write to that, because that's not somebody who's got deferred maintenance. That's somebody who has something they need to fix and they can't afford to fix it. And I want to know what the story is there. You know, maybe they don't want to move. Maybe it's a situation where, you know, they've got a good mortgage payment and they've lived in the house forever and they'd like to live there until they die. If you'd combine driving for dollars with some creative strategies, that might be an opportunity for you to get an option on the house to buy it when they are ready to sell it in return for putting a roof on it. Like, the goal is always just get a phone call and find out what the problem is and yep. see if it's something that you or someone you know can solve. The second question that Jeff has is, when you find, let's say, 100 supposed vacant houses, I feel like this is coming from his experience, and the courthouse yep. records show that 75 of the 100 don't have a different mailing address than the owner, what is the protocol or best practice? So in other words, he thinks the house is vacant. He doesn't want to spend a buck sending something to that house because he's pretty sure it's vacant. But the local courthouse says, yep, that's where the owner lives.
Yeah. Do you mean next step in terms of how to actually have that conversation with that individual?
No. He's asking how to actually, like, get the owner's real address.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in general, you know, there's a variety of you know, technology to help you with that. And if you dig online, you're going to be able to have some good options there as well. It's great that you're trying to be consistent with that. And the key too is, hey, if you are identifying houses that are tough to get, you know, a hold of the seller, like, for example, if you send them a postcard or and it comes back return to sender, or you're going through this process and it's tough to get in touch with them, know that for everyone else, it is also hard to get in touch with them, right?
And 90% of your competitors will give up at that point.
Exactly.
They get the postcard back and they're like, oh, well.
Yeah. Yep. So every barrier you have to overcome, know that your other competitors are giving up. They're not going through that. And if you can identify and be resourceful and, you know, use other tools, other things to help you out with that process to dig a layer deeper and figure out how to get in touch with that individual, that is going to be highly likely a you know, not a competitive lead at all and a great opportunity.
And Jeff, I don't know if you heard that in his answer, but yes, skip tracing.
Yeah.
Like, if you can see that the house is vacant and you can see that the owner's address is the same, you got to go straight to skip tracing. You can't waste a bunch of money on mail. And skip tracing has gotten a lot cheaper. In fact, a lot of these apps kind of have it built in to the monthly subscription or whatever. At this point, they'll just get you the best address they have. Mm-hmm. Now, even that's not going to be perfect because sometimes, like, somebody lives in a house and then they move into a nursing home. And so maybe that's the address that you get, or maybe they have subsequently passed away. So it still comes back. Another thing that you can do is, I mean, you're in the neighborhood, get out of your car and knock on the neighbor's door and say, hey, what's the story on the house next door? Because 99% of your competitors won't do that.
I'd say in general, when we look at strategies to get in touch with individuals like this, it's a combination of what we call kind of this one-to-one marketing, you know, this really active marketing that, you know, skip tracing is a great example. It's pinging a database, it's getting phone numbers, email addresses, things like this to get in touch with the actual owner of that property. You know, another great example is what you talked about, door knocking, you know, leaving a door hanger on the door, leaving a sticky note on the door, a flyer on the door, something like this, where you're doing this kind of one-to-one marketing. Mm-hmm. Doing a mix of it's ideal, so that way you're reaching out in kind of their preferred method of communication. It gives you a better chance to get in touch with them in the means that they're most likely to answer. But we see people doing this kind of short-term one-to-one marketing and then combining that with scalable marketing that is one-to-many. And so if you have a way to automate, to reach out, to be able to put somebody on kind of an automated campaign of that, you know, hey, once a month, this person's going to get, you know, a postcard from me or, you know, some kind of piece of marketing there. That kind of combination of this short-term one-to-one active marketing and this more passive one-to-many marketing, that kind of strategy in general is going to be a winning formula to get in front of, you know, you're doing the right things to identify people. Now it's just a matter of getting in front of them at the right place, the right time, and be top of mind when they're ready to sell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, third question. We find those 100 supposed vacant addresses. The other 25 do have a different mailing address. Couldn't I have just gotten that by buying an absentee owner list?
Yeah, I mean, absentee owner, you know, that's definitely a data point that we see people using and being successful with. You know, a lot of this data, again, like, it's going to take a little bit extra digging to go identify unless you, you know, are using a tool to help you with that. So, you know, I think absentee owned, you know, it's absolutely something that we see people having success with. You know, ideally you're getting out there. And again, the key is to not just identify that, but figure out the means to get in touch with them. So, you know, Vina, do you see any other, you know, tips on marketing to absentee like that?
I'm not a huge fan of the absentee owner list. And the reason is it is the most hit up list in the world.
It is
number one because it's the easiest list for list companies to get and sell you. And the second reason is it's mostly obviously rental housing providers, and there's no automatic motivation that goes with being a rental housing provider. Like, you know, there's an automatic motivation that goes with being in foreclosure because one way or another, that house is going to sell, right? But just, you know, the fact that I own a rental doesn't make me motivated to sell it. The thing is, in order for that data to be pulled by the people who are selling the absentee owner list, somebody has to know that they are absentee. And somebody who just, you know, went into a nursing home or just, passed away or just moved out of town for a job, they're not on that list. That's not how it works. They actually have to change their tax mailing address with the county, and none of those kind of people do that or do it right away. So no, you're not going to find all the people that you would find driving for dollars on an absentee list.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, I will tell you, and I think you know this because you said so in your email, I'm a big fan of driving for dollars. When people ask me, you know, like, what's the best list? I'm like, the one you made yourself by driving for dollars. So you already know that about me. And I would love for everybody to go out and do this and be able to do it, you know, have the time to do it, all of that sort of thing. But the reason I'm such a big fan is because I have kept stats in my own business for 20 years. And I can tell you, what's the response rate to probate? What's the response rate to foreclosure? What's the response rate to, quote, the absentee owners list? And what's the response rate for with driving for dollars if you do the stuff we're going to talk about next? And I can tell you, driving for dollars beats it by 3 to 5 times, beats every other list by 3 to 5 times in terms of the response rate. That's all I can tell you, Jeff. Okay. So, Matt, you mentioned virtual driving for dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what that is and whether it is just as effective as getting in your car, or is it something we should be doing if getting in the car this week isn't a possibility?
Yeah, so virtual driving for dollars would be, you know, a similar idea of, hey, going out there and, you know, building your own list, not just relying on, like, you know, absentee, as you mentioned there, which, you know, again, like, can be a useful data point, but also, like you said, absentee, specifically absentees, the most common list out there. So, you know, that's being hit up with marketing. So, you know, if you're using virtual driving for dollars, you're doing the same idea of identifying this list, building a list that no one else has by looking at the condition of the property, but you're doing it from, you know, essentially behind a computer or on your phone, where it will rely on a Google Street image. So, you know, you going in and you know, we've the look of the property based on Google driving that area and taking pictures and going out there. And we see a ton of people still landing deals from that list. It's a great alternative. I always prefer the in-person option whenever possible as plan A, just because it's the most up-to-date information, right? It's, if you're looking at it yourself, obviously it's going to be, you know, more recent than taking, you know, relying on Google Street Image. But it is still a fantastic way to get out there. And if you don't, you know, for example, if you are in a market that you're not physically based in, but you're virtually investing somewhere else, hey, this could be an option. Or, you know, if you have a day job, it's hard to get out during the day and drive around and you know, be able to identify houses. Here's an alternative. Or, you know, here you have a virtual assistant that, you know, you or somebody that doesn't own a car or, you know, somebody who's a family member that can't even drive yet. You know, there are instances where virtual can be useful as an alternative that way. The one big pro tip I will share is always compare when that photo was taken and then compare that to when that house was last sold. And the reason being is, you know, you'd be surprised. Most markets, Google is pretty actively driving the streets. Like most major markets within the last 1 to 2 years, a lot of those neighborhoods have had a picture taken. And Google Street Image will tell you that. It'll say it right there when that photo was taken. So you can look at that pretty quickly. But even in the markets that the photos are, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, I would, you know, if you have the ability to then see a good lead on that old picture and then look and see, hey, has this house changed hands since then? Has this house been sold since then? Because if it has, you know, I would take it off your list. I wouldn't add it. If it has not, then odds are, you know, again, not going to be 100% here, but odds are that it's in a similar condition to what it was when this photo was taken, and that, hey, you know, that would still be a good lead. So just from what we see in the data, I wanted to share those best practices there for you.
Mm-hmm. So perfect world you drive.
Right.
Second best is virtual. But distant third is do nothing. Like that's not gonna result in anything. Okay, so really key, and I think this is people understand the stuff we've talked about so far, but then this is where it all falls apart for them. How do I reach out to these sellers? We've talked about direct mail. We've talked about email. Is there some protocol that seems to work best?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. A couple best practices. I mentioned the marketing mix. That's ideal if you're able to get out in a variety of, you know, a couple different ways. Doing that active and passive, you know, the one-to-one and the one-to-many strategies. You know, the mix, again, you know, when we look at the data and see, hey, you know, what are the response rates to these things? If you are able to, you know, call somebody and then leave a voicemail and then, you know, leave a note on their door and then also to drop them a postcard, like doing these couple different things here, it does add up. And it's kind of like a 1 + 1 = 3 type equation, you know, where you, the more different touch points you give, the more effective that response rate is going to be. You know, and when we look at the data as well, if you are doing everything else right, and you identified the property, you drove for dollars, you reached out to them, you looked and figured out like, hey, this is a great lead, and it's the right seller, and they're actually going to sell, and they're looking to sell. Even if you do all that right, and you only reach out one time, just looking at the data, only 15% of the time are you actually getting a conversation with that seller. If you only reach out three times, it's like 47% or so of the time are you getting a conversation with that seller. And the main reason being is, hey, you need to be able to reach out multiple times to really break through, to really, you know, be somebody who's top of mind with that individual, that you are being seen as somebody who is enough of an expert that they'll give a call, you know, and be able to consider an offer. But then too, that you are consistent enough that you are there, right place, right time when they're ready to sell.
Yes. So that's so important.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And you know, it's one of the things I've learned over the years is that there are people there sitting wanting to sell who will respond to one thing but not respond to another. So if you call them and leave a voicemail, they will never call you back. But if they get a piece of mail, they'll call you. It's kind of like a personal preference thing, I think, on their behalf. Like they like to be contacted this way and maybe don't like to be contacted this way. So going through multiple media to try and do that is way more effective than just one of anything. Being a devoted direct mail person myself, I can say if you're sending out less than 3 pieces of mail before you give up, you're making a mistake. And I'm not saying don't call and don't try and find their Facebook page and, you know, hit them up there and all that sort of stuff. I'm saying that Statistically, with direct mail, you're actually going to get most of your leads on the second, or, and maybe it's because the first time they got it, they were going to their daughter's wedding. They completely forgot about it. And then the second time, they're paying for their daughter's wedding and they're like, oh my gosh, I gotta sell this house. Matt, unfortunately, we are out of time. And I know I had like three other questions that I wanted to ask you, but, you know, short radio show. So folks should come and see you guys at the National Summit, either in person or virtually. They can be there virtually driving for dollars. That'll be fun.
There we go. Like, yeah, it'll be really fun. Like you said, we're giving out prizes that are worth, I mean, literally thousands of dollars here. So, you know, the real prize is, hey, going to do deals and helping you have the foundation to know how to do that. So we're going to be teaching you that in an interactive session. But on top of that, we're going to be giving away a ton of free stuff, too. So it'll be really fun, very different, and, you know, excited to see everybody there.
I'm looking forward to it. Get your virtual ticket and support public radio at WMKVFM.org at the bottom of the page. Get your in-person ticket at OREAConvention.com. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.